What's good, everybody? Pete Jensen, Rob Reese, guest Davey Satriano around the horn talking fantasy hockey and previewing the 2021-22 season here with our mock draft 1.0, guys, right? It's about that time. What's going on?
Yeah, it's about that time. How did your team shake out, Davey? Are you pleased with the mock draft results?
Well, as our producer mentioned earlier, I was 4-for-4 last year with winning 4 leagues. So let's hope this mock draft is, I had some things, kinks to work out, but it's the first of a couple we're going to do. So I think it went okay, but we're going to discuss. And hopefully I can continue the dynasty this year.
Yeah, high bar for Davey for sure coming into the new season. And, we're hoping for 82 games. So this changes the landscape a little bit when we're talking about ceilings. Obviously, Connor McDavid hit 100 points in the 56-game season. So if we're prorating that, you could be talking about the first 150-point season maybe in the NHL since the mid-90s when, Mario Lemieux last did it. So that's pretty crazy, rare air that we're talking about with McDavid. And that's why I think with him, he's just such a safe bet at number one. Last year, we made the case McDavid versus MacKinnon versus Drysdale. I think we've all kind of just come to the consensus. And of course, McDavid went number one in the mock. And I think a big reason why, guys, is like, remember 2 years ago, he had the 100-point season, but he was a minus player. Last year, he was like plus 26. So we can dismiss that narrative that he's not going to get you a good plus minus to give you the full category scope, right?
Oh, that's out the window now, Pete. I mean, and even if he was only like a plus 2 or 3, right, and he still has 150 points, I mean, you're not going to be worried about the plus minus column there. Yeah. So I think you bring up a great point, though, regarding MacKinnon. He is such a valuable category coverage asset. The shots are always really high. The goal totals could be high, maybe even higher than McDavid in that regard, too. And the overall point ceiling is probably similar. I would say McDavid certainly has the number one point spot locked up, but the category coverage, you could make the case, MacKinnon over Drysdale at 2. I think you do say, though, if you're going to project McDavid to have 150 points, that's got to be at least 50 power play points or more, right? So then Drysdale, you'd have to think, would be right around that number as well. So are you looking at maybe taking Drysdale there at 2, Davey, or do you think that McKinnon's just a better standalone player?
I'm actually thinking of taking Drysdale at number 2, and I'll tell you why. One reason is because we all know what MacKinnon does. The team he plays for, obviously, is better overall than the Oilers. But I feel like this guy, he's been getting hurt a lot the last couple of seasons. And, to me, McDavid had that shoulder injury the first, his rookie year, I guess. But, he's fairly healthy since then. And to me, like I said, McKinnon's had all these issues, and whether they sat him or just he missed a week or two, he still performed pretty well. But if I don't get Connor McDavid, I know Leon Draisaitl is going to be piggybacking there. He's going to get 100 plus points too in this, 80, if we play 82 games. So for me, would definitely be questioning a little bit if I had the second pick on which guy to take. Nikita Kucherov also not far behind there.
I think you could make a case for each of these guys. You look at MacKinnon over each of the past 2 seasons, his point pace over 82 games was 111. So like he's never hit 100 before in a season because of injuries and whatnot. But if he's healthy for the full season, he's not only going to get you 100, he'll probably get you 110. That's been his pace the past 2 years. So that's one thing, but that's like talking upside. If you're talking about solidified guys, the point Robbie made is clear. I mean, you look at goal totals over the past 3 seasons, Drysdale is second behind Austin Matthews. You look at point totals over that same span, second behind his teammate Connor McDavid. So if anybody's the safest pick at number 2, it's Leon Drysdale. But MacKinnon did go at number 2 in this mock. And Drysdale went 3 over Kucherov, who has some injury concern, right? After playing through something in the playoffs and missing the entire regular season last year. But actually, the highest point total of any active NHL player in the NHL is Kucherov with 128 3 seasons ago now, 2018-19. So if you're looking to make a case for somebody else at number 2 and you're looking at Kucherov, who's been lights out in the playoffs, you wonder, will the Lightning bring that same intensity every single night in the regular season? I don't think they will. I think they'll wait for playoff time to put their best foot forward. But Kucherov's still as good as anybody, in my book, at least.
Kucherov has the right wing position, which in these mock drafts, it's so heir apparent that once you get outside rounds five or six, if you don't have an elite right wing, you're just not going to have one. And in fantasy, you have to look at that. You can play fantasy football, and if you miss out on one of those good receivers or running backs, I mean, you're just not going to be an elite team in fantasy. There's no other way to slice it and dice it unless you luck out on the waiver wire early season. So I would say, you know, you could consider Kucherov at two. Now, good point, you know, was mentioned that, okay, there is a little bit of a lingering injury concern. That's fine. But I think even if Kucherov missed, you know, 5 to 10 games, you'd still get 100+ points, right? So you certainly can't discount that. And then another player in the first round, I think that also fits that narrative now is Austin Matthews, Rocket Richard winner now. This is a guy, gentlemen, I think we could see score 59, 60 goals over an 82 game season. Wouldn't shock any one of us, but whoa, out of left field here is this late surgery that he had. Now, a lot of people clamoring on Twitter, why didn't he have it earlier? Is he going to miss a little time? Is he going to be 100%? And when you're dealing with a surgery that involves, you know, your any way that you shoot the puck, he's a goal scorer. And in fantasy, you got to score goals. So maybe there's a little question mark surrounding Austin Matthews. I still, you know, pulled the trigger, I think, at 7 overall in the mock. But that's certainly something that has gone across people's minds heading into their real fantasy hockey drafts.
Well, when you look at it, he had, 40 whatever one goals in 55, 54 games, whatever he played in. He had the surgery, as you mentioned. He's probably going to miss, it's at about 6 weeks, which puts them at the first game of training camp for them. So their first preseason game, the season's not till 14, 15 days later. So I would say he's probably going to be ready for opening night. But even if he misses the first couple of games, he'll play, 75, 80 games with a wrist that is healed. You mentioned these 40-something goals in 50 games. I mean, we could see this guy get 60 if he, you know, if everything shakes out right. So I agree with you. To me, he's a fringe top five player. I like the four forwards we mentioned earlier, McDavid, McKinnon, Draisaitl, Kucherov. The only other player I might put above him, which I selected actually, was Andrei Vasilevskiy, just because goalies, I think, if you can get a goalie who's going to start 65, 70 games, to me, it's better than, you know, a top five forward. But I think Austin Matthews is like in the 5 to 7 range. I think he's going to finish in the top five this year for sure.
Right. We were talking about, of course, after Henrik Lundqvist retired the other day, we were talking about how goalies back in the day used to play 70 plus games. Lundqvist did it before. Brodeur did it so many times. But that just doesn't happen anymore. So even with that said, if Vasilevskiy is going to play 55 out of 82, and then they'll give their new backup, Brian Elliott, a bunch of games as well, and he'll provide some fantasy value off the waiver wire, I'm sure, even if Vasilevsky's healthy. But Vasilevskiy is by far and away the top goalie. He's the only goalie I would consider taking in the top 20 overall. And like Davey said, you might even consider him at number five because of the injury concern to Austin Matthews, who we have ranked at six. I actually took Panarin over him for a little glitz, you know, as Michael Leboff says, for the New York Rangers. I'm excited for what they're going to do under Gerard Gallant. But yeah, I actually took him over Matthews because I am concerned with investing my first pick into a player that has an injury at a, you know, key part of the body where it's like you're it could affect his scoring for the upcoming season. Even though Matthews has been so darn good, right? Each of his five NHL seasons, at least 34 goals, and then scoring 41 in only 52 games. So in the shortened season, so maybe he's, Robbie, one of the only guys in the entire league that could approach 60, 65, because when I was looking back at those lists of who has had the best goal totals in the NHL, I think it was Ovechkin with 65 that one year, and Stamkos had 60 once, but nobody's gotten close to that total since then. So maybe if Matthews is healthy for close to an 82 game season, he could get close to 60 and he can break some recent records here.
Well, just a quick note on Vasilevskiy before we move ahead to the next round is that when you're in the fantasy hockey season, you're about 2 or 3 weeks in, the trends are starting to normalize. It is so reassuring to have a guy like Vasilevskiy who you know is going to get a quality start almost every time they play. Now, in this mock draft specifically, you can view this on NHL.com/fantasy. Check out the goalie combinations that some of these teams ended up with. I had one team, guys, where I just had the two goalies from Toronto as my only goalies in fantasy. And that is just not a situation where you want to get yourself into, because you have way too much riding on that one team. Whereas if you have Vasilevsky, you know what you're getting. You're getting a lot of wins. You're getting the most dominant standalone goalie in the game. And the team situation, he does not have someone garnering starts behind him. No chance of that. Look at Colorado, another elite team. Yes, Darcy Kuemper is going to be tremendous this season, but with his injury history, you have to think Pavel Francouz could be a guy that gets starts. Look at the Capitals, Samsonov. Yeah, he's a good goalie. He's a young, promising kid, but he has Vitek Vanacek, you know, breathing down his neck, right? You have these situations that just don't scream security like Vasilevsky does.
Well, it's a good point that you mentioned here, but so for one of my teams that two of my first three picks, I took Vasilevsky and I took Hellebuck. I figured those are going to be two of the top five goalies. They're not going to get hurt. They're going to play 65, you know, games or so. But then when I look at the rest of the team, my best forward was Alexander Barkov. I got Strome, Palat, Mantha, Mark Stone. So, you know, not the best forwards, but there's always forwards available during the season as opposed to goalies. But, you know, one of the other teams, I took Fleury. I figured, hey, you know, the Blackhawks are improved. We'll take a gamble. So I took Kevin Lankinen in there just because I said, you know what, in this case, I want to have the tandem because that's 82 games. You know, I'll probably get 80 starts, whatever, if none of them get hurt. And the other goalie I took was Carter Hart just because at that point there wasn't much. So you're kind of right with, you know, you've seen a guy look the last two seasons, well, the way Carter Hart was last season, and, you know, he was great in his rookie season before that. So to me, I always want one top five goalie, and then if I can, it's always hard to get two because your team's gonna turn out like my first one. But I agree with what you're saying. You never know with these tandems, guys can get hurt. Guys are, you know, some teams have three good goalies, so you always want to make sure you have at least a number. Like, no matter where you are in the draft, you need a top 10 goalie for sure on your team. If you can get a top three goalie, then at that point you say, well, maybe I can go for a guy who might split starts, whatnot. But I always lean towards goalies first in the first two rounds because I think they are just so valuable.
Right. It's tough when you take a goalie so high, then you feel like you need to address other positions, and then you can really get deeper down the draft and only have that one goalie to show for yourself, which is actually what happened to me on the team where I took Darcy Kuemper as the second goalie off the board at 22 from the Avalanche, like Robbie mentioned, after the trade this offseason. And then I secured Pavel Francouz in the final round of the mock draft. So he was the only player that went in this mock draft, Francouz, that was not ranked in our top 250. We're going to throw him in there at the end in our next update on Wednesday this week. You can find that list at nhl.com/fantasy. But yeah, back to the goalie tandem that I secured in Colorado. Then I sprinkled in the middle. I got Jeremy Swayman as my lower end number two rookie with upside. And then I actually got Nedeljkovic as well. So I'm carrying four goalies on that team, including the Colorado tandem, which should be a safe bet. And then I'm hoping that one of Ned or Swayman pans out in terms of the younger guys. Of course, Nedeljkovic now with the Red Wings, so maybe that's a little less likely, but you never know. I think that team's on the up and up and could surprise some people in Detroit this year.
That'd be great. I mean, to see Detroit take that step forward, you know, put them back on the fantasy map with Larkin and everybody would be really cool to see that. Round two, interesting little trend here. We had Brady Tkachuk actually go 12 overall to close out round one, one pick ahead of Cale Makar, Victor Hedman, and then Mitch Marner, who a lot of people on Twitter were saying, how on earth, you know, did Brady Tkachuk get picked over Mitch Marner? And why don't I let Pete, who I, you know, he did that, let's let him hear it from the source directly.
Right. So Brady Tkachuk, I guess people, the only people that realize are the people that have had him in recent years, but he ranked second in the NHL in hits and also second in shots on goal. And he's provided steady scoring up until this point. Of course, if the Senators, who were maybe on a little bit faster of a track than the Red Wings, surprise in that tough Atlantic division, like they did down the stretch. When Brady Tkachuk is dropping multi-point games, there's nobody out there, maybe other than Ovechkin, that is going to provide that type of bang for your fantasy buck. So yeah, that's my thinking with him. Last year, he had a minus 17 and he still finished 12th overall. And this is a guy that has, I think, barely scratched the surface of his scoring ceiling in the NHL. So that's why I went so high on Brady Tkachuk. It's just a guy, especially after seeing Ovechkin go a little higher, you're reminded of how valuable elite category coverage can be. And therefore, Brady Tkachuk was worth a first round dabble for me at 12-13 wraparound. I was interested to see what you thought about that, Robbie, because I know you're a big wraparound guy, 12-13. And I took Tkachuk at 12 and Cale Makar as the top defenseman. I know you have Hedman ranked ahead of Makar, but I don't think you can go wrong with Cale at number 13 right after Brady.
No, and if you have the wraparound pick, that's exactly what you want to do. You want to have a player that could finish first at either position. I think there's a real solid chance Brady Tkachuk could finish first overall at left wing. Let's just look at the line he plays on as an example. Josh Norris, the center, in his rookie season, 35 points in 56 games, including 14 on the power play. I mean, that's some serious noise out of Ottawa, who really wasn't that exciting of a team last year. And then on the right side, you have Drake Batherson, who had 17 goals in 56 games. I think that's a really sneaky line. If you miss out on Brady Tkachuk early on, like Davey and I did, you can get one of those two guys later in the rounds, get the exposure. Now, for Cale Makar, you know, he is a player that is really could take that next step. Now, why do I have him ranked number two in the D ranks? It's simply because Colorado's got a tight blue line. Everybody from Devontae's, Sam Girard, they can pass it like anybody. They can shoot and they can score. I mean, they have those guys, right? So I just hope that Cale Makar can take that next step where he could be a 70-point defenseman. It's possible, right? I just think Hedman has that security, Davey, where it's like he's industry standard. You know exactly what you're getting. And we saw Sergachev kind of be disappointing offensively in the playoffs. So I don't think you have someone, you know, waiting in the wings like you kind of do in Colorado that could hurt his fantasy ceiling.
Well, I agree with you. Victor Hedman to me would be the number one guy. Pete, as we know, likes to take these younger guys. I mean, hey, I love watching them too. Cale Makar, Brady Tkachuk. I love Tkachuk. I had him on a team last year. I wouldn't have taken him in the first round just because, not only because of the team he plays on, but I don't know about you guys, but all of my leagues don't include hits, in which case, you know, he takes a bump down. But to me, just looking at other players drafted in the second round, like I wouldn't have taken Tkachuk above a Brad Marchand or a Braden Point. But, you know, there are a couple other guys, but you agree he's got the great upside. It's definitely fun watching a player. You know, when you draft the team, you want to have fun rooting, watching your players. And, you know, every night Brady Tkachuk's going to probably put on a show and be fun to watch. So I wouldn't have had him in the first round for sure. But, you know, I do love him as a player. And I think he could definitely finish in, I say he could probably finish in the top 20, but I don't think it would be like 10 or above personally.
One of the biggest comments we got, or so many of them, volume of comments from this early mock draft, was that Brad Marchand slipped outside the top 10, and also Sidney Crosby slipped outside the top 15. So Crosby has had point per game each season of his amazing NHL career. And Brad Marchand, since 2016-17, is third in the NHL in scoring and third in points per game. So this is not like anything flukish. He's one of the safest fantasy players. You could take him at six over Matthews or Panarin, and nobody would question you or even think twice about it. So just wondering why Brad Marchand slipped a little bit. Are the Bruins on the decline without David Krejci? Are they going to have to split up that top line at all? What do you guys think about the state of the Bruins and why maybe Marchand's value has dipped, at least at the surface, in this first mock draft simulation?
He still has a great position in left wing. That's very valuable in fantasy. He still has a point ceiling of around 100 points, which, again, is nothing to scoff at. My concern with the Boston Bruins specifically is they kind of fall into the line of the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals, where we're so used to seeing these guys dominate year in and year out. They're kind of on autopilot at this point, right? Now, with Boston, you have the concern, though, of the turnover. Tuukka Rask, what's going to happen there? Is he going to come back later in the season, you know, when he's healthy? Maybe. How's the new goalie tandem going to work out? Do we have questions about maybe Swayman being ready for the spotlight? Is Ullmark going to do what he did in Buffalo in Boston? You can't say that's a given, okay? And then with Brad Marchand on the top line, I mean, this has been automatic for them for so many years that it's almost like, yeah, if he falls into your lap, great. If Patrice Bergeron falls into your lap, great. But the only player that I'm really going after on that top line is Pasternak for the goals. And I don't know why beyond that. It's just, I think they have maybe just a little bit, the shine has worn off, right? It's just, you know what you're getting. It's not as exciting as a Brady Tkachuk, as a Cale Makar, as an Artemi Panarin, right? So I think that's the reason they slip in drafts.
And Davey, from what you saw in the playoffs from Boston, kind of a weak defense outside of Charlie McAvoy. Now no Rask for bulk of the season, no Krejci for the entire season as he went back to the Czech Republic. I mean, what do you think of this defense? I mean, is the defense good enough to keep that goalie tandem afloat if Rask doesn't come back? And, you know, what does that mean for, I guess, the power play and the offense? Do they keep it rolling, but then, you know, to, you know, overcompensate for what's going on the wrong direction defensively in Boston?
Yeah, you know, I feel like the fact that they've lost a Krug and a Char and these, you know, guys who've been with the team forever defensively, Rask is hurt. I think the guys on offense are going to say, look, we have young guys on defense. We have two goalies that haven't really played. Well, one hasn't played for them at all. One was a rookie last season. So I think you might see the offense even step it up and say, look, we might not win games 2-1 anymore. We need to score 3, 4, 5 goals a night. So the offense to me never really struggles for the Bruins in the regular season. Sometimes it just seems to happen in the playoffs, but you know, I think, as we mentioned, Brad Marchand slips, so to speak, but when the season ends, he's going to be right there with what, probably 90 points, you know, 30 plus goals and be a top guy again. So I think the offense is probably going to say, hey, you know what, Taylor Hall, even, you know, without Krejci, just look, we have young defense. We have goalies that we're not used to playing in front of. So we've got to step it up. So maybe we'll see even more offense from the Bruins because of it.
So I have a question here for the goalie master. We saw Robin Lehner go 25 overall. For anyone that doesn't know, that is the first pick of round three. If you have the first pick in round three, you had the first pick overall in round one. I took McDavid with the first overall pick. I took Adam Fox with the 24th pick. And then on the wraparound, I said, I need my number one goalie here because I'm not picking for a long time. I'll take Robin Lehner, who should fit into the Vasilevskiy mold only now because he doesn't have, you know, the timeshare situation in Vegas. So do you think Robin Lehner, who has an NHL career high of 25 wins, can take the next step? Is he ready for the spotlight, Davey?
I feel like he is ready for the spotlight. But to me, the reason that I got Connor Hellebuyck with my next pick, who I was going to take anyway. So thank you for not taking him.
Oh,
I don't know. As you mentioned, Lehner, he hasn't really had this. He had a run, you know, with Vegas where he played whatever, like 10 or 12 games in a row. But you mentioned he hasn't been the number one. You know, he played well for the Islanders and that system. He was what, I don't know, was he a Vezina finalist? Whatever he was, he won the Jennings Trophy. He had career numbers. He's been great since then. I don't know about Vegas. There's been some turnover on the team. You know, they lost some of those locker room guys besides Fleury. They lost Ryan Reeves. They lost a couple guys. I don't really know what we're going to see out of them. Maybe this is the year that they're not expected to win, so they, you know, perform better. But I'm actually kind of a little worried about Lehner just because, like I said, we don't know what it's like when he struggles. What are they going to do? They have Laurent Brossoit as their backup. Like, to me, he's not a, you know, he was with Winnipeg, backed up Hellebuyck. He's not a guy that's going to play 10, 15 games in a row. So if Lehner gets hurt or struggles, I mean, what does Pete DeBoer do? You know? So to me, it's a nice pick. It's like a sexy pick. Oh, Vegas, we know he's going to start. There's no competition, but it wasn't something that I wanted to avoid. I'm not really sure what to expect out of him because you mentioned he hasn't played 55, 60 games in the season. So I'm not really sure what to do here. I don't know what we're going to see out of him.
I think it's one of those things, right, guys, where you look at the efficiency of a goalie. Does Robin Lehner deserve to be the full-time number one? Yes, he has for a very long time. I mean, right, he had like that weird situation in Chicago where he went there after on the high note after the Islanders Vezina finalist season. And with the Islanders, of course, he was like kind of a timeshare with Greiss at the time. And then he was a timeshare with Fleury. So he's been knocking at the door for this for a long time. 918 save percentage over the past four seasons combined. That's among the league leaders. So Robin Lehner deserves this. Even back to his time with Buffalo, he had a couple of efficient seasons. So we'll see if he can translate here. I think a big thing for this Vegas team to replicate what they've done in recent years is that they brought back Alec Martinez. So they have Shea Theodore, they have Petrangelo, they have Martinez. That's a strong defense. If Robin Lehner is healthy, he's probably going to finish number two among goalies behind Vasilevskiy. I think that's a pretty safe bet for fantasy, maybe even a little bit safer than Kemper. Because another thing I wanted to mention about Colorado a little earlier is with, and this is regarding McKinnon and anybody on that team, that kind of reminds me of that situation of Tampa from a few years ago. Like, they won the President's Trophy and then they failed again in the playoffs. So like, is there a little bit less of an emphasis on the regular season in Colorado? I think you could see that this year, and maybe that caps some of their fantasy ceilings as a result. So maybe that's another reason why, even though I reached for Kemper, Leonard's a little bit safer at number two among goalies.
No, that's a great point. I agree about Colorado, right? It's like their prove it time is in the postseason now. And Davey, yeah, I like your Hellebuck pick too, because that's a player that has proven, even with kind of a shaky decor, that he's going to be a standalone guy in fantasy. He's going to get you around a 920 save percentage. He's going to get you a handful of shutouts no matter what. Now, other players in this round, you could kind of compare these goalies to. Igor Shesterkin went in the third round as well, who I'm very high on the Rangers. I could see him finishing number two overall in fantasy. It's just you have that tag on them saying, is this defense ready? Is Keandre Miller going to be the shutdown guy? You know, Adam Fox obviously is a stud, but what beyond that? So you have that question mark there. And then beyond that, you also have a guy in Semyon Varlamov, who, again, very high ceiling for the player, but he has Sorokin right behind him, who could easily, wouldn't surprise any one of us on the show if Sorokin took the starting job over and just ran with it. So when you're making that goalie decision in fantasy, these are all things that should come to your mind and say, okay, here's the pros, here are some cons. And that's kind of why I took Lehner. I'm like, there's less cons to Lehner than some of these other situations.
That's a fair point. I mean, with Shesterkin, he's going to be the starter. We know that. Varlamov, who was taken next, you know, it's a great pick, but if you're going to get him, to me, you kind of need to make sure you also get the other guy, Sorokin, because, you know, who knows what could happen with them. And they're both going to have excellent numbers all around again because of the system they play in. But in the next round, Pete actually took Spencer Knight, which I thought was, you know, I wouldn't have gone that high with him personally. And because if you're paying a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky, what, he's getting $10 million for seven seasons, whatever it is. Are they really going to have Spencer Knight play, you know, 40 games? I don't know. In the future, yes. But right now, I'm not really sure. But we saw Spencer Knight in the playoffs. We know the kid can play. But to me, in the fourth round, I probably would have taken someone a little bit safer than that.
Well, we know that the goalie landscape drops off a lot right after Hellebuck. I mean, and even Hellebuck, as much as we like him, I think the Jets should be a playoff team, but you never know. I think that Central's a little competitive with teams like Chicago getting better, Dallas having 12 players in our top 250 rankings, including four goalies. So even if a couple of them get injured, like you could see Dallas finishing maybe ahead of Winnipeg. I don't think that's too far-fetched, but yeah, back to Spencer Knight. I mean, my expectation is that he will win the starting job from Bobrovsky this year. So, I mean, based on that, that's why I reached for him. Does that mean a 60-40 split in playing time? That's probably realistic. I mean, I think if he wins the job, that means he gets more than half of the starts. So that's what I'm banking on with that pick. And after the drop-off, like I said, am I going to take a Freddie Anderson, who's coming off, has been on the decline for a few years, as much as we like him in Carolina? Like, am I going to take a player like that who may be on the downturn of his career? Or am I going to take an exciting young player like Spencer Knight or Sorokin, who I actually took on one of the other teams a few picks later? So that was a big reach as well. But you know how the run on goalies happens in these fantasy drafts. And I would side more with Spencer Knight or Sorokin than I would with some of these other guys like Fleury or Frederick Anderson and guys like that, Cam Talbot, UC Saros. That's just my personal preference.
And if we haven't said it enough, the Florida Panthers were really excited about that team this season. Aaron Ekblad actually went around before 26 overall in this mock draft to Davey Satriano. So if that says anything about how we think this team is going to be this year, it's definitely nothing but praise. But I want to talk about something more controversial here. 49 overall, we had Jack Eichel go. So still inside top 50 for the player. But how can you enter a draft right now, at least in late August, and say, this is a player I'm really excited about this season if he's going to remain on the Buffalo Sabres with a neck injury?
Well, I guess we should be asking you since you're the one that selected him. However, I'll share my thoughts here. You're right. The problem is we don't know. I don't know. Did he have the surgery? Is he going to? I mean, how much time would he miss? Where is he going to end up? There's just too many questions. And to me, we know how good of a player he is, but without knowing how much time he'll miss, I don't even want to say what team he'll be on, because we know he'll produce if he's healthy, but who knows when he'll even play. So I was kind of trying to like avoid it as much as possible. I probably in my head, I said, if he slips to the seventh round, I'll take him. But that was just more of me saying, you know, at that point, I, you know, we might as well take a flyer on the guy. But if you took him in round five, you must think that he's going to find himself in a situation or be healthy this season, I guess.
I do. And I just want to, you know, have a positive attitude on that whole situation. And for Buffalo specifically, I think it's a great market in the NHL. I think they deserve to have a superstar caliber player like Eichel. And you saw how quickly the tune changed last season. You know, coaching change happens. The team kind of buys in. You know, you see guys like Sam Reinhart, who obviously now is in Florida, but you saw those guys kind of come alive, right? Casey Mittelstadt came alive. Dahlin looked a lot better, right? Their goaltender situation was interesting. Even when they were playing down to the third or fourth guy, you know, they were still racking up some wins. So I look at this Buffalo team and I'm hoping for the best. If Eichel's on that team, if he's starting opening night puck drop, I still think he's a top 50 player in fantasy. And Pete, I think you would agree his ceiling is still among the top 10 overall players. It's just, we need to see him play 82 games. Even if it's on a team with Buffalo with a little bit of a nagging injury concern, he still has that skill set. He's still one of the most dominant players in the NHL when healthy.
Well, I think by taking him at 50, and that's where we have him ranked, right around 50 overall in our top 250, and we'll keep him there in the next update, even though we don't know what's going to be happening health-wise or what team he's going to be playing for. I agree with what you're saying about his floor, but the floor actually this year is that he maybe wouldn't be ready for the start of the season, whether he's on Buffalo or not. If you're taking him there, you're hoping that he gets traded to Vegas or traded to Minnesota or traded to the Rangers, where he could have some really serious line mates. He'd have Panarin with the Rangers. He'd have Kaprizov, assuming he signs with the Wild. He'd have Mark Stone and Pacioretty with Vegas. So that's what you're really getting yourself into here. If you're and there are other places, too, where he could get traded to. But things have calmed down on that front. It's kind of this awkward stage right now. So our first hope is that he's healthy for the start of the season, whether he has this surgery or not. And Jack Eichel's potential is really high, but of course things have gone sour in Buffalo. So I would say probably less likely that he starts the season in Buffalo between the injury and the trade speculation. So, but yeah, definitely worth taking between the 50 to 60 range in any draft, just in case, because the second he gets traded, if that happens, right, you'll see him back in the top 30, 25, maybe even top 20 overall discussion if he goes to one of those three places that I mentioned.
One thing I'm just curious about, maybe you guys know the answer, is he listed as IR right now? Like, if you draft him, can you put him on IR, or does he not, because we don't know what the deal is? Because if you can, then there's, you know, then you can draft him as high as you want, because, hey, I can immediately, you know, pick up someone else. But I'm not sure about that because I haven't actually seen my Yahoo leagues yet.
Well, the Twitter account that he created recently and tweeted out one like rolling eyes emoji. I mean, that is not, I am not feeling confident, gentlemen, about my pick there right now at this minute. That's kind of hope. Right. And see what happens. Your comment about the IR, Davey, for anyone that doesn't understand the reference, if a player is listed on IR when you draft them in fantasy, you can stash them on an IR spot so they do not count towards your active roster. So if you do select Eichel, if he's listed on IR to start the season, let's say he has the surgery, right, misses a couple weeks, it's a great incentive for you to pick him around the 50 to 70 range, because that's a player that when he comes off the injured reserve list, he's going to step in there and produce from the get-go. So it's a nice kind of 200 IQ, Davey Satriano, four-time world champion type play.
And I actually just checked. Jack Eichel is on IR, and Yahoo Fantasy Leagues launched this week. So you could start playing around with mock drafts and see how they compare to what we just did on NHL.com/fantasy. And you can create your leagues. So start, you know, gathering your friends together. We're inside 2 months to go before the start of the regular season. Therefore, it's fantasy time, fellas. So it's an exciting thing to see Yahoo launched. We have the position changes on NHL.com/fantasy as well. So time to get to work here with the homework and the draft prep.
Hey, guys, you brought up a name during the Eichel discussion, Kaprizov. Curious, where are you taking him? There's some question marks. I believe he's going to sign, no problem. Wondering your mindset, your strategy dealing with that player.
You take this player in round two, There's no other way around it. Again, you know what you're getting into right now with the contract negotiations. If you're drafting early, it's not going to give you full reassurance. But what we saw with him every single night from the Minnesota Wild was electric. Every single goal he scored was a highlight reel goal. That, to me, says his ceiling is even higher. His ceiling is round one in fantasy. Now, with Minnesota, you do have to say there's an asterisk here that the other offense is not that exciting. The center situation there is not that exciting, but they have young player Marco Rossi who could make the roster this season. He could totally tear it up, right? You saw other guys on that team. I mean, I was streaming Eric Sinek. I was streaming, there was a Nick Bonino stream at one point. I mean, there were other guys, you know, down the lineup that you could stream and say you could get some bang for your buck. So that's all because Kaprizov is electric, because he can score, you know, at least once a game. He's got a probably 100-point ceiling. So you take him in round two. You hope that the contract situations get all done up, which their GM says he's confident about right now.
I took him in the second round with the 23rd pick. He joined Nathan MacKinnon as the first two forwards on my team, players on my team, which I like a lot. I saw some reports the other day that you know, he's not going to play in the KHL now, which originally it said. So that kind of makes you think, okay, they're going to sign him. You know, he'll, even if he misses, I don't know, training camp or a few games. But last season, he was the rookie that I actually drafted him on all four of my teams. I got him in like the 10th round, the 12th round. And it's a big reason why I won, because taking a guy that low who did that well. But of course, this season, he jumps up incredibly high. I think you're right. He's definitely not going to get out of the third round, but I think the second round is probably where I'd place him. To me, he's kind of like that one of the players where, as Rob mentioned, I would watch the Wild. To me, they're one of like the most boring teams, and I'd watch them every night to see what this guy's going to do. So just having him on the team, I think, is one of those players that you just love watching. So that's why I said, you know, second round, he's available. I'm going to take him before someone else does.
I guess my only concern with the Wild is like what you said about the roster flaw at center. If Rossi's not ready to take that big leap in his first NHL season, if I do take Kaprizov in the first two or three rounds, certainly handcuff him with Rossi, one of the sleeper rookies, Calder Trophy candidates. He had COVID last year. He missed the whole season because of the complications. Sounds like he's healthy now, so that's really good to see. And you can take Rossi late in drafts, right in that same range as like Pod Colson and Quentin Byfield and Jamie Drysdale, Bowen Byram. You're picking between a lot of quality rookies that late in the game. All those guys got drafted late in this mock. So, you know, Rossi's one of those definite sleeper rookies because he could play as high as the first line in his first NHL season, which we expect to be this season. But Minnesota, then, therefore, like, I'm still a little worried because of that roster flaw. Like, I'm worried that they might regress a little bit. They're going to be in a tougher division from top to bottom than they were last year. Of course, last year they had Colorado and Vegas. They played really well against those teams, so give them credit for that. But the rest of that division was pretty bad last year. So now they're going back to the Central, where you could see six of the eight teams be in contention for the playoffs, including Winnipeg, including St. Louis, who's still not done yet. Chicago, Dallas, right? Colorado's going to win that division most likely. So a lot of competition in that division. So if Minnesota regresses and they miss the playoffs, and he has not a sophomore setback, but, you know, could certainly see his numbers not be as attractive as they were last year over a full 82-game season.
Let's talk about the Dallas Stars a little bit here. We saw Miro Heiskanen go in the draft around the 65 overall range. He went 67 in round six. And then the next round, we saw Jason Robertson, who was a Calder Trophy finalist alongside Kaprizov, go the next round at 80. So when you look at these players on a team like Dallas, again, they're not jumping off the paper at you. But keep in mind, last season, even with all their injury concerns, Joe Pavelski knocked it out of the park in fantasy. Rupe Hintz was tremendous when he was healthy. He was literally day-to-day for almost every single game last year and still had a tremendous season. Radulov, again, even in his mid-30s, he's producing, right? And then on the back end, you have Heiskanen, you have Klingberg at goalie. They've got like 10 goalies now, so good luck figuring that one out. But I like this Dallas team. And if I was making a futures bet, I'd probably be more inclined to put something on Dallas this season than Minnesota. I just like their core. I think they had a little bit of a hiccup last season with injuries, and making it to the Stanley Cup in a very rare situation kind of hangover. How do you guys feel about Dallas? Are you kind of think of what I'm thinking, that they're a good sleeper team this year in fantasy and in, you know, potential Stanley Cup odds?
I definitely do. And a couple of reasons are they're, you know, one season from removed from making the final. The roster is pretty much the same, except they have four goalies now, which, hey, if one of them gets hurt, two of them get hurt, we know we don't have to go out and acquire a goalie. But to me, you mentioned all their forwards who have been producing. Tyler Seguin missed like the whole season last year. So now you get him back. You got Ben Pavelski. We know how good the defensive guys are. You mentioned Hintz last year, and Robertson could have been the rookie of the year if it weren't for Kaprizov. So to me, I do think you're right. A lot of people are probably overlooking them. I don't have the standings in front of me, but I think they lost like 12 or 13 games in overtime last year, which is almost a fourth of, you know, their games. So they're pretty much right there. Even, you know, they missed the playoffs, but I think they're going to be more like the team that we saw make the final rather than the team that missed the playoffs last year. You can probably get some good odds now. So I agree with you. To me, they're definitely a team that I'm watching and would be a good sleeper team in real life and in fantasy life.
For sure, Davey. I mean, you look at, right, Bishop was out the whole season. And of course, Radulov banged up, Sagan banged up. Sagan came back for the final few games to try to give them lift, scored two goals in three games. To me, I look at this Dallas team in the same conversation with teams like Vancouver and the Rangers as non-playoff teams from last year that are probably going to get in this year. But I think Dallas is safer than those other two teams when you really look at it. And who has a better blend of veteran savvy and youthful spark than the Dallas Stars right now? I mean, Hintz and Robertson, Haskinen, and then on the other side, you add Ryan Suter, you add Braden Holtby, you already have Bishop, who may not be healthy, but if he is, one of the top flight goalies in the league. Khudobin is decent. Jake Ottinger is really exciting young goalie prospect. So I just think like their defense is really sound with four strong options with Haskinen and Klingberg, as a Lindell. I mean, this team is so deep, and now you're going to see a combination. You'll probably see a Ben Sagan Radulov line, and then you'll see the other line have Hintz, who scored better than a point per game with Robertson. So, I mean, that's a great blend for me. I think Dallas is making the playoffs this year, as long as at least one of those three guys is healthy.
Totally agree. I like that team a lot. I do want to talk about a team. It's probably not going to make the playoffs, but I think it's one of the major fantasy storylines is Jack Hughes and the New Jersey Devils. We saw Jack Hughes have nice improvement last season. Nothing, you know, that still warrants that first overall pick and reaching for him in fantasy. But I saw, you know, a lot that I liked in his game, Davey. I know you watch Devils a lot, but he went from a minus 26 to only a minus 3 last year. Hey, that's improvement. He had 123 shots his rookie year, 142 in his second season. And if you had to ask me, out of Alexis Lafreniere, Kaapo Kakko, or Jack Hughes, who's going to knock it out of the park this season? I'll put my money on Jack Hughes. I think the addition of Dougie Hamilton on that blue line on the power play is exactly what they were hoping from PK Subban, Davey, and didn't get it there. Now you have that solidified with Dougie Hamilton. You also have intriguing guys, Sharon Govich, on the top line, a lot of good young players that I think, you know, are getting overlooked. They've been drafting really well. Bratt's another one of them. Nico Hischier should have, if he's healthy, a good season. So I'm really intrigued by Jack Hughes. And the cherry on the top here is that he's center left wing. So you get the two positions. We love that.
You know, last year watching him when the season first started, he came out firing like he was just all over the ice. He was doing everything right. And I think I agree with a few of your points. One, the fact that they got Dougie Hamilton now run that power play with Jack Hughes, that can only help him score more, and not only on the power play, but that definitely helps. You know, they got PK Subban for this reason, and you mentioned it has not panned out, but Dougie Hamilton comes in, you know, Nico Hischier is healthy. Sharon Govich, I think he scored the fourth most points among rookies. I mean, who knows? Who knew that really, except for me, because I actually looked this up and said, I wonder who was behind, you know, Kaprizov and Robertson, but they have a lot of young players. I think Miles Wood is the oldest forward, and he's, what, 26 years old? So we saw last year they traded away all their guys, Palmieri, Zajac, all these staples. They said, we want to get younger. So I'm not sure if they're going to be an exciting team to watch. They probably will have growth pains, but with all the young players they have, Hughes is probably the one that you'll say, you know, it's his, what is it, his third season, fourth season, third season. He's going to probably take a huge step, and he has the guys there to help him. And also, they have Mackenzie Blackwood, who struggled last year, but they did get Jonathan Bernier, who was playing on Detroit, and his numbers were pretty good playing on Detroit. So New Jersey's defense, you know, they've allowed us, has been pretty much the same as Detroit's last couple of years. So you bring in a guy like Bernier, a veteran, can help Blackwood. I think, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they'll definitely be more fun to watch than in, you know, last season. And I think Jack Hughes could easily get 65, 70 points. And that's, to me, that's towards the low end. I think last year, Pete, you said he could be a point per game guy. I think this season he could get up to that point.
I think he could as well. I think this Devils team is going to be more like the Devils team from 2-3 years ago than the Devils team from last year, where they were a real bottom dweller, but really competitive, tough to play against. They'll give teams like the Islanders fits. They'll give teams like the Rangers fits on a night-to-night basis. And yeah, the speed of Jack Hughes' game-breaking ability for sure. So you see, as a result of the Hamilton signing in New Jersey, you see four players going this mock: Dougie Hamilton at 56, Hughes at 88, Blackwood 130, and Ty Smith 139. So, and again, you could find this whole mock draft on NHL.com/fantasy. As we're going through it, definitely check and see your observations and see who went higher than you thought, who went lower than you thought. And it's a good basis for us to update our rankings the next time, and also for you to get yourself ready for your real deal draft, whenever it's going to be, late September, early October this year.
Yeah, so we saw two rookies that I'm most excited about. Cole Caulfield at the forward position, right wing, go 79 overall, excuse me. Trevor Zegras, he got drafted a little bit later, but I just wanted to touch on Caulfield before we get too far into this draft. I think this is a player that wouldn't surprise anyone if he lifted the Calder Trophy this season. If you project Montreal's top line this season, Toffoli on the left side, Suzuki in the middle, Caulfield on the right side, I think that could be a top 10 line in fantasy, Pete, on the line rankings we do. So that really excites me a lot. Now, the only problem that I'll throw out here, the one downside, I did reach for this player a little bit. I felt it when I did it. You're going to have to do that to get a Zegras or a Caulfield in most cases. The reason why, there's just always this more, you know, allure to a rookie in fantasy hockey. It happens every single season. But keep in mind, the last couple seasons for rookie forwards that have been drafted recently typically have not returned value. It's more of like the 2017 guys, you know, Robertson coming in. It's more of Kirill Kaprizov. I mean, what was he like, 2015? I mean, you know, you have the older guys come in and take the scoring title as a rookie. So do you have those concerns with Caulfield and Zegras? I don't, but that being said, I go back to the well every single year and reach for players like Lafreniere, for Hughes, for Kako. I'm the guy doing that. So I want to hear from you guys if you think that way or not.
I am a little worried about Caulfield. I mean, I think he's going to score. He's going to score big game goals, overtime points, you know, especially when he has open ice. But it's such a tough division, and I wonder if Montreal is even going to make the playoffs, whereas you could get Zegras. Like, I got him at 150, and I know Anaheim's going to be a bad team, but if Zegras and Drysdale collectively explode and, you know, overachieve based on expectations, that's a much better pick for me at 150 than for you on the cusp of the top 75 overall. So it's just the reality. We love Caulfield as a player. We think he's going to light it up this year with those line mates, but we also wonder about the category coverage. What's his category coverage going to be? Even if he scores you 50 plus points in a good scenario this year, is he going to get you hits? Probably not. Is he going to get you good plus minus? Who knows? Not if they miss the playoffs. And he'll get you good power play points because they'll be on the first unit. But outside of those two categories, I'm just a little worried about reaching too high for Cole Caulfield.
So for me, I agree with what you said about Cole Caulfield. I would probably take him and have more confidence in him than those Anaheim guys like Zegras. Just Anaheim, though, three seasons in a row, they've been the least, you know, scored the least amount of goals or second to last. So yeah, he's exciting. I know we all love those exciting guys, but these games are all going to be like 2-1. They'll be lucky if they score one goal every night. So I can't really, I think last year, the Ducks high scorer had 46 points and, or maybe 30 something. And a few years ago in a 70 game season, it was like 46. So I don't know. I can't really say I'm that hyped up about Zegras.
That doesn't excite you, Davey, the Ducks high-flying offense? You're not penciling them in with the Coyotes to be the two top scoring teams this season.
Well, the good news for you is we know you'll be sleeping before those games start, so you won't have to see them. They would put you to sleep otherwise, but
no, I think the Ducks have like some outside appeal, but I agree with Pete. I mean, those guys are going to fall into your lap later in drafts, and it's all about the ADP. If you get them at a good range, you're going to get more value. Now, outside the top 100 here, we have a really interesting range of wings where we have Marty Nichesko, 115. We have Anthony Mantha go 116. And then Pavel Buchnevich with his new team go 120. I think that's really good value for each one of those players. We'll start with Buchnevich. How do you view him now that he's away from the high-flying Rangers? He's with a little bit more of a boring team, but this is a player that really took a step forward last year, and obviously St. Louis ended up to get him. They must really believe in this player.
I just wonder who's going to play left wing on that Blues team, because they have a surplus of right wings, assuming they keep Tarasenko, who's still on the roster. So, and it sounds like Tarasenko's healthy, right? So then you're looking at Perron right wing, Tarasenko right wing, and Buchnevich right wing. If Buchnevich can play left wing, he's probably going to land with O'Reilly and Perron. If he doesn't shift to left wing, then Brandon Saad might get that spot, in which case his fantasy value would spark a little bit, like kind of along the lines of when he played with MacKinnon and Rantanen for some stretches last year when guys were injured. So, yeah, I think that I'm a little hesitant on Buchnevich, but I'm more than comfortable taking him 115, 120, like where he went in this mock. Would I take him fringe top 100? Maybe, but I think there are some safer options up there. And yeah, I like where he landed in this mock. And Nietzsche's went a little lower than I thought as well. I mean, I think he's going to take on an even bigger role this year. And, you know, Carolina's forward group is loaded, and he took a huge jump last year, and I don't think he's hit his pinnacle yet or anything close to it. So Nietzsche's is really good value at 115 from the Hurricanes.
I think for me, Buchnevich is a guy I would probably target out of those guys. I think what do you have, 20 goals, 40 something points, the Rangers. You're right. We don't know what the lines are going to be with the Tarasenko situation not sorted out, but you know, do the Blues really have that many offensive guys right now besides, you know, O'Reilly? I mean, even Shen has kind of been struggling. You know, they lost Schwartz. So Perron's probably the best, you know, point per game guy. But Buchnevich could be, you know, their second or third highest scorer this season. So to me, I like the trade for the Blues. And I would probably say that, you know, the 10th round there where Rob, where you got him, that's pretty good. I like that as one of the offseason moves that I say, hey, you know what? This could increase his stock, you know, 60, 65 points even. And to me, he's the guy in that range above the Nietzsche's, the Manthas, that I personally would take.
I think another fun debate this year in fantasy is going to be who has a better season. Is Anthony Mantha with the Washington Capitals or Jakub Vrána with the Detroit Red Wings? We saw both players, you know, score right away with their new teams. To Vrana's credit, he kept it up more than Mantha did. Mantha scored in his first four games as a Capital and then kind of disappeared. And you're kind of thinking, he's going to win, you know, the scoring title, and then he's totally gone. And then for Vrána, he's got that 4-point game, and you're like, wow, he's going to win the scoring title. And then their offense kind of dries up. So I think these are two players actually in similar situations. For Mantha, he has the team security, but I think Vrána is the better player. So this is going to be down to the wire. I'd probably lean Mantha just because of the security. But again, Pete, I think you said it earlier on the show. I mean, now with Nedeljkovic, this Detroit team is probably poised to actually take that next step forward. I think these are two guys you target outside the top 100, maybe around 110, 115, that could return some serious value.
And Detroit has some high-end prospect, rookie-eligible guys, Mo Seider, you know, of course, Lucas Raymond, like really good high level draft picks. And then of course you have Dylan Larkin hopefully coming back healthy. And with Larkin healthy, we didn't get to see Vrána playing with Larkin because he was banged up last year. So if Vrána can score four goals in a game without Larkin, what could he do with Dylan Larkin? So that's really exciting when you look at the ceiling. I don't think as we spoke about at the time of the trade, although we liked Mantha a little bit more in the short term, this full season upcoming could be the time where the narrative shifts and we say, oh, Jakub Vrána just had his full-fledged breakout and was top five in the league in goals. I mean, because he's playing on the power play now and Larkin was healthy. So that's what we're speaking about here, about some of the sneaky upside if you can land Jacob Vrana outside the top 100 overall.
I'm glad you brought up Larkin, because I'm looking at these later rounds and I'm just trying to pinpoint some players that I feel like, you know, have dipped due to recent performance or for whatever reason, like Patrick Laine in round 14. And how about this? Just a perspective on how quickly things can change in the NHL. Look at where Carlson and Burns are. I mean, a couple years ago, 2 years ago, these guys were going, crazy. We were talking about, you know, taking them in the first round or something like that. Yes. And now they're in the bottom. True. It's absolutely insane. But yeah, Larkin, and I saw a couple of comments on Twitter, you know, people bringing up Larkin. And I think it's an interesting guy to keep, you know, keep an eye on and see how he performs this year in fantasy.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Bob, because when we're doing this draft and I see Pete say select Brett Burns at 166, I'm thinking, wasn't this guy drafted like 100 picks ago? And then, I, of course, he wasn't. And I said, oh, Carlson's still there. I'll take him. Well, you know, he could do okay in the 14th round. But those are two guys that just, you know, the last two or three seasons completely trended the other way. But the San Jose team, we don't know what we're going to get out of them. They have some new goalies. You know, they have a lot of young players. So Brent Burns, to me, that not a bad pick. If I guess you're drafting him there as your fourth defenseman at that point, right? Or maybe even fifth. So that's not a bad pick at all, I don't think.
There's not a team that excites me less in fantasy than the San Jose Sharks. It's just, I think the whole Martin Jones effect the last year just crumbled whatever pillars they had left, even with him on Philadelphia, which, by the way, we could do a whole episode dedicated to what is that. But that being said, I mean, I just can't see myself selecting Erik Karlsson or Brent Burns. I'm scarred from the last couple seasons. The plus minus is not going to be there. The scoring, unfortunately, is not going to be there. And I think that they're going through this awkward time where it's like they need these young guys to step in and play, but they've traded some of these young guys away too. So they don't have that intrigue. So for me, I'm going to pass entirely on the Sharks. You know, if I had a Tomas Hertl later in rounds, that's fine. Logan Couture, that's fine. But I am not investing in their defense or goaltending position this year.
I mean, I think the last hope for them before they, you know, decide to maybe make some trades and trade some of these guys away or buy some guys out. I know they bought out Jones, and there are a couple other guys on that list in the coming years that could be included in a similar regard. But you know, certainly if they can bring in that Eklund kid, and I know Beniers and Owen Power are staying at school. So if you're looking at one guy that maybe could join a team where he has an opportunity, it's that kid Eklund. So, but we don't even know if he's going to play this year. So it's just something to keep in mind. If you hear news that he's going to join the team at camp, you know, maybe he's a guy that could spark the whole group and revitalize that group. Otherwise, yeah, Brent Burns, I took him as the fourth defenseman, like Davey speculated. So on that team, I had McAvoy 1, Letang 2, Werenski, who's a quality third defenseman, and then Brent Burns, you know, on a prayer for my fourth spot at the position. Could be worse than that. At least Burns has remained productive in some categories. Carlson has just been, you can't find him anymore. I was so patient on that guy last year. I thought easy division outside of the top three teams. It just didn't materialize. I hung on to him for way too long. So I'm not swinging and missing again, but maybe I'll take a stab at Brent Burns in the late rounds.
As we wind down here and we do some rapid fire, I got a quick question for you guys. As I look at Major League Baseball, San Francisco Giants, a team that the expectations were very low. They've exceeded expectations tremendously this year in baseball. As you look at the NHL landscape and you see a team that maybe you're figuring, yeah, they're not going to be very good, but has a shot of being much better than what the projections are, and a team that you would invest in fantasy wise, I want an answer from all three of you. Where are you going?
For me, it's the Ottawa Senators, clear in a way. Tim Stützle is another example of a player, Bob, you can get in one of the last rounds that is absolute superstar potential. You watch this kid play, he can do it all. He can go in the corner, he can hit, he can score. He is the same mold as a Brady Tkachuk, who's on the line above him. So you're going to have two dynamic lines there, big young kids that can play, that can score. You look at their defense, Shabbat. This is a guy that should absolutely be an automatic on your draft board outside the top 100. You're going to get all those power play points. And then finally, their goaltending situation. Guys, we were all at one point streaming an Ottawa goalie. It didn't matter who it was last year. They were all producing. They were all hanging in that division. They were surprising And I think their coach, DJ Smith, is really, really sharp. So I'm going to say the Senators. I like how that division shakes out for them too. Maybe a little sleepy at the top, and then they can kind of come in and surprise, I think in the middle pack or so.
Well, for me, yeah, we already mentioned this team. I think it's the Detroit Red Wings. They just improved in a lot of areas. Nedeljkovic was a rookie Calder finalist last year. He's definitely, he's an upgrade from Bernier, even though Bernier played well for them. The defense, they added some pieces. I mean, they got, they re-signed Stahl. They got Nicoletti. They got some veterans. They have more Seltzer, however you say his last name. We'll learn it. And even offensively. So I think to me, yeah, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they're not going to be the worst team in the NHL. And I think they're going to be a lot more exciting to watch than in past years. And also the division, now that we're back to normal divisions, they're not going to have to play, Carolina, Florida, and Tampa, eight times. Well, actually they might, because they're in that division, but they'll get some easier games. The schedule shouldn't be as tough for the full season. And I think they're definitely going to be a lot better than what we've seen in the last, 4 or 5 years.
My pick is the LA Kings. And I think this was a similar fashion to last year when Robbie made that pick. And for a while, it was looking really good, right? They went on a 7-game winning streak. They have this young core. Then it just, train kind of went off the tracks a little bit, but I was really encouraged by what I saw from them last year. And I think they got a lot better here. They're not going to rely on Vilardi or Byfield to be their number two center. It's going to be Philip Deneau who can man down the fort and play two-way game and make the players around him better. So like he did in Montreal regular season, and especially during the playoff run, they got Edler for veteran leadership to be their number two defenseman behind Doughty. And then Victor Arvidsson can score the puck. I'm excited to see Arvidsson play with Kopitar a little bit, maybe turn the page away from that Iafallo line with Kopitar and Dustin Brown, a little bit stale, always productive, but a little stale to me. So maybe Arvidsson provides that spark. I just like the way the organization is trending, and with the division being favorable, we could talk about how that benefits the Kraken in their expansion season. We could talk about how, some of these teams could get back into the mix. But I think behind Vegas and the Canucks, the third pick for me right now is the LA Kings with some confidence. So, and Cal Peterson, I love the final pick of this mock draft. Robbie took Cal Peterson, up and coming young goalie. If he becomes the starter and they make the playoffs, could be the single biggest goalie steal in the entire fantasy draft, most drafts speaking. So, and he might even go undrafted in some leagues. So look for Cal Peterson on the wire, because everybody's sleeping on the Petersons and anybody outside of Kopitar on that team. Nobody's really taken seriously, but the Kings could be for real as early as this season.
Few final thoughts here. First on the Kings, yes, agreed wholeheartedly, Petey. That would be my pick in the West. And Philip Deneau, one of the best faceoff centers in the whole league, one of the best two-way players in the whole league. And the LA Kings have already been among the best in puck possession the past few years, even with their losing track record. So you're just going to see that improve. They've got a lot of young players coming in. They're well-coached. They're well-disciplined. And Cal Peterson is a player I love. So make sure to circle him on your draft boards too. And then one other thing, Davey, I think you said it a segment or two ago. Just keep in mind now that this season, teams are going to be traveling east to west again. So you're going to see some goalies benefit from that. I would look at a Tristan Jarry or a Jacob Markstrom as not exciting names, and you can certainly get burned by them, but as good bounce back names, if you get into a bind and that's going to be your second goalie, I think you could do worse. So just look at a goalie. I think it would be Markstrom, in my opinion, to kind of experience a slight bounce back, just because they're going to get some favorable matchups. They're not going to be, at least for the Flames' sake, they're not going to be in the North, which they were scoring like 6-7 goals a game, up there. So I think those are good ones, Davey. If you find yourself in a little bit of a pinch, you can get one of those goalies in late rounds.
Yeah, just one last thought for me. We didn't really mention the Seattle Kraken. Just looking at the board, I think there were only four players from the Kraken draft. I think it was Grubauer, obviously, Vince Dunn, I think Giordano, I believe Jordan Eberle was the only forward that was drafted from them. So four players drafted from the Kraken. It's interesting. They're obviously a team that they're new. We don't know how they're going to play, but I would have thought maybe a couple more of their forwards would have been taken, but I'm sure it's a good option. A lot of drafts will probably have a lot of Kraken players that are on the board still. So see how they do early. If you like anything, the way they look in preseason or anything, they're going to have plenty of players available for the taking.
Right. And it's not surprising to see the more scarce position go off the board. Like I took Vince Dunn. He's one of, whether you call him a breakout or a sleeper, I think he's a real good commodity if he plays on power play one in Seattle. And then, of course, Giordano went a little bit later. But you see, yeah, nobody took Yanni Gourde because he's entering the season with an injury, may miss the start, may miss the first few months. Nobody took Jaden Schwartz, who's probably going to be on the top line, but you don't know who his center is going to be. You don't know if he's going to be healthy. It's the same story with Jaden Schwartz. His upside is there, but there are a number of concerns. So people sided with the defenseman in Seattle. Not shocking. And Driedger also didn't get drafted as the backup to Grubauer. Grubauer was their highest picked player. So, hey, guys, this was a great show. Everybody should check out Mock Draft 1.0. We'll do 2.0 later in the offseason. And then, some stacks as well. You could find that we did some sleepers. I know on one team I took Kaapo Kakko on the same team as Zibanejad and Panarin. So get creative in your mock drafts and see what you could build here.
I just want to wrap up by saying the breakout fantasy player of the previous season was Adam Fox for the New York Rangers. If you had to ask me right now who it's going to be for this season, I'm going to go Kirby Dach of the Chicago Blackhawks. I think this is a player that is ready to take that role. He's going to be alongside Patrick Kane, most likely, who we all know he's an industry name in fantasy. And then when you look at Chicago, I absolutely love what they did this offseason. They really invested in their veteran guys, surrounded them with quality players. And Doc, don't forget this. He had a nasty arm injury suffered in the World Junior Championship. Otherwise, I think he could have been along the lines of a breakout player last year. It's going to happen this season. Do not hesitate to select him. Center only, late rounds.
That's a great pick, Ravi. We could see a lot of offense and power play production from that Chicago team this year, especially after they shored up the back end. So, hey, guys, we'll talk again soon. Davey, thanks for joining us for the Mock Draft annual edition, and really good stuff, and always bringing some new ideas to the table here, as Davey does. And, Davey sometimes avoids goalies, like as much as we call him goalie master. Some of those teams were hurting in the goalie department for a while, but he always finishes it on a high note and gets creative. So thanks again, Davey.
Davey, thanks.
Got a couple of weeks. We'll be watching some preseason. Then I can really put my goaltending cap on and watch and see what we got here. So looking forward to it.
Love it. So for Satriano, Bob Bender, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you again next time. NHL Fantasy on Ice. Go back and listen to our other season preview content. A bunch of more episodes to come here on NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for tuning in.